Welcome to Transformation Nation with your hosts, Jason Krantz and Jordan Morrow. Whether in your personal life, family, career, or more, each of us has the power to transform. Our episodes are designed to help empower everyone to transform into the person that they want to be. Jump into this episode to learn how you can become who you want to become. Hey everybody, how you doing? Jason Krantz here with my good friend Jordan Morrow, and today is a treat. My guy Jordan, he has a nickname. He is called the Godfather of Data Literacy, and for good reason. He is one of the founding fathers of this, and we have the pleasure, actually, we all have the pleasure of hearing him talk today about this topic that he knows extremely well. Jordan, how you doing today, buddy?
Oh, man, I'm so good. I don't know how many people watched it last night. It's May 27th today, so last night was a replay of Game 7 of the 2016 World Series, where my Cubbies, and you're from the Chicago area there yourself, still can bring a tear to an eye. One of the best parts, though, quick anecdote on this is early in the game, I had a longtime buddy of mine. I grew up with him, played baseball together. He's a diehard Indians fan. I'm a diehard Cubby. And early in that game, he went to all seven games of the World Series, all seven. And there's a picture of him. It's after Dexter Fowler's home run or whatever. And they're showing a picture of the crowd, and he's just got this grumpy look on his face. So I was messaging Jim last night, and we got a little kick out of that. But doing fantastic, man. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing great. Like you said, it's just things are starting to turn around. This quarantine is getting over. And, again, man, we got you here. And I'm really excited for this. I hope the audience is excited for this. And one of the things I learned early in my career is that when you're in the presence of greatness and wisdom, it's best to just be quiet and listen. So what I was thinking today is that I'm just going to be asking questions and just taking in what you have to say on this topic, because I believe that this is a major, major topic for everyone. It transcends the work world. I think that this is a general skill set that in a digital community, we have to have these abilities to work with data and have that literacy. And kind of to that point, for those that don't know, kind of give people an overview of what is data literacy? And then the second part is, why does it matter?
Yeah, so let's go into kind of a formal definition, and then I'll kind of go into, let's just get real with it and talk about why it matters. So formal definition. And a friend, colleague, Raul Bargoff, he was at MIT. He and Catherine D'Ignacio from Emerson University a few years ago came up with the definition. That's the ability to read, work with, analyze, and argue with data. Wow. Okay. Four characteristics, right? I've changed it a little, just one word. And that I use read, work with, analyze, and communicate with data. I think argue with is correct, but it can be misunderstood. Right? Are you arguing with data? Should we be fighting? No. The way I would describe that, it was two things. You can argue with your own data, interrogate it, question it, challenge it. Or you put a position forward, you back it up with an argument, just like a lawyer would do in a court of law. So I changed it to communicate, and that's the one I use, because the ability to communicate with data is paramount. And this ability to get your stories across, get your analytics across, everything across. And so now, okay, so there's your formal definition. Let's just talk plain name here. I mean, let's do this. Data literacy is a person's confidence and comfort in using data and analytics. That's how I would describe it. It's this ability to take data and information. Remember, data and information is just that. It's just data and information, neither good nor bad. It's just data and information. It's when we put it into the hands of people and it gets manipulated, it gets tossed and turned, it gets used, that it can turn for good or bad, trustworthy, etc. What we want to do with data literacy is empower individuals with abilities to succeed with all that data information, helping organizations make better decisions, helping individuals make better decisions, essentially capitalizing on it. So what do I mean by capitalizing on it? So this goes to the latter part of your question. Why is it important? Well, let's think about data. Okay. I think it's by the year 2025. One prediction out there is that there will be 100, and this is the annual data sphere, 175 zettabytes of data by 2025. If a person doesn't know what a zettabyte is, take 175 on a piece of paper and then put 21 zeros after it. 21. Okay. A billion has 9 zeros. Double that. You're still at only 18 zeros. You have to add 3 more. That's what you get to. So data truly is an amazing asset, absolutely amazing asset, but it is underutilized. Adoption of data initiatives and analytical initiatives is low because people do not have confidence with data and analytics, and that's data literacy. And one thing I also want to make clear is everyone already has skills in data literacy. It's not binary. And I love to say it, it's not. It's you're not data literate or data illiterate. No. Everybody has data literacy skills. How many of us use a weather app? Well, you have to read data to understand how to use a weather app, right? So it's just a matter of how can we empower you more to succeed with your organization's great asset of data.
That's a pretty robust definition. I mean, the thing is even though that was a pretty crisp narrative there, you covered a lot of ground. And I think the idea that I agree 100% that the communicate theme is central to this. And it is because I've seen it in my career. I know you've seen it in yours, is that you can have the best facts in the world. You think you have everything buttoned up. If you can't communicate that narrative and get people to connect with it, I'm willing to bet you will fail in terms of you won't achieve your objective. So that communication piece is absolutely essential. But you brought up another point that I found exceptionally interesting, and that is facts can be interpreted in a number of different ways. I've seen it time and time again. We're actually seeing this play out in the real world with the COVID situation. One example, I was talking with a family member recently about, we were talking about, the deaths and the sickness and everything. And I don't know all the latest exact numbers. So I'm just going to use numbers here for illustrative purposes, just so everybody's clear. My numbers are probably wrong. I'm fully aware of that. But let's just say, the US is at 100,000 deaths, right? And Italy is, at 80,000. And now somebody's like, well, the US is higher. And I go, well, yes, the US is higher, but it also has, 50x the population. So what you need to do is you need to find some way to really benchmark what is the percentage of sickness, or you know what I mean? Like some way of kind of rationalizing that. On the flip side, and again, my numbers are off here, acknowledging that up front, but somebody, I think I saw China had like 100,000 cases or whatever. And I just did, if you do some simple math and you look at all the countries everywhere and the percentage of their population that is sick with this, then you look what's happening in China. Well, it's vastly lower. So what it would suggest on the surface, there's no proof of this, this is just marketing math, saying if, well, China's percentage looks ridiculously low relative to their population. Their population is what, quadruple the US, but they have, less cases potentially. It's things like that that kind of give you the ability in my mind to sniff test. I just say, does that number make sense, right? And you see this with us coming up on an election season. I think that this is an extremely valuable skill set for people looking to make informed decisions. And this isn't a political statement at all. It's just saying that as you're forming your opinions on, political topics or whatever it is, data literacy can be an extremely valuable tool to, again, sniff test and do your own independent analysis and make your own independent judgments. Kind of to that point, I've outlined a couple examples there, but I know you have a laundry list of what are some examples and how does it play into our individual lives? Like, why would people want to pursue this? Not just professionally, and I think you've talked about some of this, not just professionally, but also personally.
You touched on one of the biggest ones, and that's the COVID situation that we're dealing with right now. Now, I'm not going to go in just like you. I've been asked to like write about this, talk about this, and I've avoided it because it has become too political. And but the reality is, COVID-19 presents one of the best data literacy examples that I've ever seen. Because you could see there was one of the pandemic or CDC's leading pandemic experts. I forget who it was in the official title, but he basically came out and said every single model is wrong. And the reason was we just don't know the true denominator. It was as simple as that. And by denominator, I mean we don't know how many people have truly had this. So we don't know a true mortality rate. We don't know a true lethality rate. We do not know a true infection rate. We don't know these things because a lot of people could have had it and never known it, never and fully recovered from it. And so, but every model that goes out there shows this and that. And then when it gets into the hands of the media, and I hate to say it this way, but everybody knows this on both sides of the political spectrum, numbers get manipulated. And this is why I personally say data and information is just that, data and information. When it boils down to the trustworthiness of it, I cringe. I don't like when someone says, I don't trust the data. No, you don't trust the manipulated way that data was presented to you. This is data literacy. This is it to a T. So how does it manifest itself? I mean, it can manifest itself in many, many different ways. So I use the weather app example, and it's one that I love to use. Martha Bennett, she's an analyst with Forrester. I've shared the stage with her multiple times. She uses this example. We all do it. How many of us have ever bought a house or pay a rent or pay utilities? And we can look at the data behind it. We can look at the different rates. We can make smarter decisions. So to me, and there's actually a course on called this basically at the University of Washington in Seattle called Calling BS. And I call data literacy a BS indicator. So we see it manifest in different ways. And politics is one of the best examples. And I don't, again, we're not going to talk politics. I pretty much refuse to do that, to be honest. yes. But it like the 2016 election provides a case study in this example. So let's talk about some data literacy here, and then I'll go into it more from an organizational perspective. But in 2016, we saw all these numbers coming out from and credible from like a credible source or two, right? And the numbers were showing such a high percentage for one candidate to win and a low percentage for the other candidate to win. And then when it went to the way of the lower percentage for the candidate, there was, in some cases, mass freakout because people are like, but the model said this, the model said this. Well, let me point out, it is just a model. Mm-hmm. And so here's another example. In 2008, we had the housing crisis. Let me ask you, Jason, do you know what the percent likelihood was? And this is a number I learned a long time ago. The percent likelihood of that crash happening, do you know what that likelihood was?
Oh, I remember. It's really low, wasn't it?
It's 1%.
Yeah.
A 1% chance of that happening. And guess what? It happened. Now, this is data literacy in and of itself. They were using housing models based off of 100 years of housing, but we had never seen an era or time of housing like we were experiencing before the crash. And so to base prior a current model on prior data that is apples to oranges, that's data literacy in and of itself, right? But 1% chance happening. So let's take a look at that. Out of a million times of something happening, that's still 10,000 opportunities. And so people don't realize these things. So now let's bring it back to the 2016 election. Okay, let's say one candidate had an 85% chance of winning and one had a 15% chance of winning. The 15% ends up winning. This happened in 2016 with some of the models. Let's turn it now to college basketball and March Madness. And I apologize to anybody in our overseas audience who doesn't follow March Madness here in the United States. This is the college basketball national tournament. 64 teams, essentially 64 teams, are placed in a bracket, seeded, four categories, 1 through 16. Let me ask you, Jason, how often do upsets happen in March Madness? A 12 seed beat a 5 seed.
Every year I think it's at least half or maybe three quarters of the time the 12 seed beats the 5.
Bingo. Statistically speaking, though, what's the probability of that happening?
Oh, it's quite low because if they're seated correctly, they're in the variable.
Yeah. Exactly. But in college basketball, it's understood this is going to happen. We have data literacy understanding. That's just a probability. Mm-hmm. It just happens. In an election, we don't see it the same way. The underdog won. And so this is data literacy in our real life. These are things where, you know, when things happen, like for me personally, I'm a data literacy guy. Like you said, I don't like saying these things per se, like the Godfather. I'm one of the founders of this. So for me, data science and these sort of things come out. Oh, okay. I get it. Get frustrated when bad models are shared to the world because then decisions and things can be made. But over, and I don't, I mean that just in general. I'm not saying, mm-hmm. you know, people try their best. And I like to give a salute to that during the crisis that we're dealing with. I think a lot of people have tried very hard to give us the best models possible, even if there's incomplete data. And I think that's a wonderful thing, trying to do that. But now let's take it to the business setting, right? When would this matter? When would this matter in our careers? When would this matter for us, this ability to read, work with, analyze, and communicate? Well, first off, let me point out, in that definition, nowhere do we use the term data science, right? Data science became such a hot topic, such an amazing topic, and it is a very valuable skill. Now, I define data science in its pure sense, and that is using the scientific method with data, right? And nowadays mm-hmm. it gets so muddied and people who work on data visualizations will say they're data scientists. I'm like, go ahead, call yourself what you want. Me, when I talk about it, I talk about data science from the pure perspective. It's technical. It is harder. data literacy. You don't need to be a data scientist. You need to have data literacy skills. So let's say you're trying to run a marketing campaign and you're presented with all this data in a dashboard, all this data in a visualization, cluster analysis, all these things, and you have no background in this. Are you really going to get value out of that? Are you really going to be comfortable taking that data and making a decision? No. This is why organizations and individuals, if you're trying to run a better marketing campaign, you're trying to do better financial decisions, you're trying to, in the HR world, hire people and retain people and understand why people are leaving and doing this and that, data literacy matters more than I think people realize. And that's why it should be the reason the movement has become worldwide. Gone from some little nerdy idea I had to now I travel the world and speak with companies. Some of the biggest companies you can think of, conversations have happened. And for a lot of them. And so, or in the process. So it's a matter of, there's a lot of awareness around it. Now it's time to take that next step and become better.
I like what you're talking about there, because I know in my conversations with people, people think that data literacy means they got to learn statistics and they got to learn all this advanced stuff. And kind of to your point, so it says, no, quite the contrary. You need to understand the basics of data. You don't need to get into that stuff. There's people that do that. And the analogy I use, I go, listen, let me give you a real world situation for me. You know what? Like, I do very heavy financial analysis. I cannot do accounting. I don't need to know how to do accounting, but I need to know how to read a balance sheet and an income statement, which are the output of the accounting team that contains financial information. So in the same way that I just need to be able to read a financial statement, I don't need to know accounting. You don't need to know how to do data science, but you need to know how to use the output of that process to make better decisions. And rightfully so, I can completely empathize with people that maybe aren't as numerically savvy in this realm, how it can be very intimidating, because you see the headlines of data science and statistics and all of this, and it's just, it can be completely overwhelming. Yeah. And that's where it's like, start small. I actually recommend a lot of times for people, it's super easy. Start with Excel. If you're not familiar with the kind of the inner workings of Excel, start with that. And a lot of times people are like, Excel? I'm like, yes, Excel is probably one of the best data literacy tools that is available in my mind, because it's so prevalent. It's everywhere. Everybody does everything in Excel. I know a lot of my data and analytics brothers and sisters will laugh at that, but I say it all the time. Like, right, listen, right, wrong, or indifferent, Excel is a primary tool for data literacy, and it's accessible to everybody, and it can be learned quite easily. You know, I want to go back for 1 second, just to go about 5 minutes. We're talking about a false sense of what I took away, a false sense of confidence in models. Mm-hmm. And modeling is exceptionally hard. How do you see kind of data literacy helping people to grasp that core concept of that models inherently are going to be flawed? They're going to be wrong. How do you kind of see this understanding of data literacy kind of, I guess, facilitating that understanding that, hey, these things might be off?
That's a great question. So let's take a step back to when we're kids growing up and learning mathematics, okay? Because data and analytics is inherently positioned with mathematics. There's no doubt of this. We learn that 1 + 1 = 2. Fair enough. Would you agree with that one, Jason? And if you,
I concur.
Right? Yeah. We know that Oreos plus milk equals deliciousness. Totally different topic. But the reality is, we learn that data and analytics, I think there's a mindset that things are binary, either or. And so for the audience to understand what I mean by binary, I mean either or. And then with data and analytics, I think there's a binary mindset from a lot of people who are not comfortable or who maybe not be as familiar as we are with data and analytics. And what I mean by this is they see a result and they think yes or no. This result came through. This will happen. This is the probability this will happen. The reality, though, is that in data and analytics, there needs to be a comfort level in our mindset with ambiguity. We have to understand that it is not an either or. It's that it's an either and a maybe and a possibility and a no, right? So if you have a probability of something of like 87%, wonderful. That is wonderful. Run with it. We just have to, and data literacy, part of your question was, how does, I believe the how does data literacy help with this? Data literacy mm-hmm. helps teach us in our minds. It teaches us how to understand and develop comfort with what I could say are two things: ambiguity, being okay with that gray area, being okay that it might work and it might not, being okay mm-hmm. with this understanding that we ran this analysis, we're pulling this lever. Let's say the analysis gave us four levers, each one with a probability of success. We're going to pull this one that had the highest probability of success. We pull it, man, did it tank, right? Mm-hmm. Historically, this gets us to a discomfort, because in business, people yeah. would say that's failure. You and I would say that's learning, right? Yep. Nelson Mandela, one of, if not my top hero outside of, you know, my father, grandfather, whatever, said, I never lose. I either win or I learn. And that needs to be like stamped to everything within data and analytics, because you pull the lever, there's ambiguity enough, it's going to work. And we have a probability, and then it doesn't. So the second thing that data literacy can help us get comfortable with is an iterative approach. Understanding that this is not a one-time thing. Oh, you ran an analysis last quarter on this. I'm going to wipe my hands of it. I guess we're done. Never. Right. Next quarter. Oh, we pulled the lever. We have to iterate again. More as more data and information comes in, as we have more confidence in our data literacy skills to read, work with, analyze, and then communicate with it, that gives us more confidence to should give us more confidence to iterate better with it. So as more data and information comes into the system, more learnings happen. Things can happen. Practical real world example. Let's dive into our weather app. I was going to go a different direction, but let's talk about the weather app. I used to get extremely frustrated with the weather, right? You have your forecast. It doesn't come in the way it says. You're just gosh darn it. And then I read a book called The Signal in the Noise by Nate Silver, who owns 538.com. The guy is a data science genius. He is really good. And by the way, he took a lot of flack after the 2016 election, because his model showed one way and people weren't happy with it. But I believe he was one of the only ones, I believe, who said that the margin of error was such that Trump could win. But that's a whole different topic. I read his book about how weather forecasts are done. They are so complicated. So complicated. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. we get better and better with it. So let's say we're looking at the weather. Let's say I'm traveling on a vacation, coming out to the great city of Chicago to see my Cubs play. 2 weeks away from it, I'm looking at a 14-day forecast. How accurate is 14 days out? Pretty inaccurate, but I'm seeing it showing sunny. Fantastic, right? I get to 7 days out. I get to 5 days out. I get to 2 days out. As more time comes in, more data comes in, more information comes in, with data literacy, we can make better decisions. And I think those are two things, talking about the models out there and challenging assumptions. What can data literacy do? It can help empower people with a comfort in ambiguity and a comfort within iteration, understanding that data and analytics can be based on probabilities. And I'm sorry, I could monologue this entire time, and I think I probably am. But we just also have to understand that data and analytics needs to teach us to not be caught in perfection paralysis. Right? We can't sit here and run an analysis until we get to 100%. First off, it's probably near impossible. And second, that could take way too long. Let's say we're running an analysis and it took us 4 months to come to 100%, or as gosh darn near close as we could, but the decision was made 3 months ago. You just wasted 3 months. And so we have to understand these things. And this is what data literacy does for people. It empowers them with this knowledge. It gives them confidence in those four characteristics so that they can go out confidently with skills to succeed in these areas.
You know, your part about perfect data, Jordan, that is one I have seen time and time again. And it gets to the theme of what you said, ambiguity and risk. And as a result, to try to mitigate that risk, people want complete and perfect information. There's a quote from Jeff Bezos that, I think he said, If you're waiting for 100% of the data that you need to make a decision, you're being too slow. Make a decision, essentially saying, make a decision with 70% of the information you need. You're probably going to have enough. And there's a great little, I'll try to find it and share it, but there's this great exercise I go through to illustrate this to teams I'm working with. And so I give them it's a picture. It starts with one pixel and then it goes to 4 and then it goes to 16 and you start adding more pixels till you eventually get to the final picture. And what I tell the group is when you can identify what this is, shout it out or write it down, the point that you're at. Then when you can tell, like, if it's a person, what person it is, who is it, write it down. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at the percentage of those pixels that are complete. Most people can tell it's a person within about 30 to 40% of the pixels being pixelated. And they can tell the person usually around 60%. Now, I use this as an illustration to say you didn't need 100% of the information that's available to make that decision. It definitely refined like your confidence that that's the person, that one is a person, and that two, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger or whatever. That's the one I usually use as the Terminator. But it's a lesson to say now the very same thing is true most of the time when you're making business decisions with data. You think you need A, B, and C. You might only need A and B and a little bit of C, but having all of C doesn't incrementally add any value in terms of it just gives you more confidence. It hasn't fundamentally altered your core idea. And I think that that's a very valuable perspective. 100%.
I was just going to add, can I add one thing real quick on this? Is the differing perspectives. Not everyone comes to the same conclusion at the same time. I think people lose sight of this, is that not only is data and analytics not binary, but when you're running analysis, you might get one perspective that is different than another. And we do not want to put a room together with data literacy and data analytics, in my opinion, where everybody comes up to the same conclusion at the exact same time.
Oh, yeah.
If you just put a room of yes people together, you are in trouble. I want varying perspectives. If we're looking at an analysis, we just put up a few visualizations on a chart in front of us. It's you, me, and a couple of our friends in a room trying to analyze this. I want to debate. I want to dig in. I want to find, could it be this or that? And so when you think of the pixelated picture, and by the way, we need people with confidence in data literacy skills to be able to do that. So we're seeing how this works. It's just like the pixelated picture. Some people might get it in 20 pixels. Some might get it in 40, 60, 80.
Yep.
Eventually, once the picture's up there, you might have some naysayers that are like, let's say it's Brad Pitt up there. They're like, that's still not Brad Pitt, even though it's exactly Brad Pitt. Then there's a whole different ball game to go at with them. But you know what I mean? I think that people lose sight, too, that varying perspectives is absolutely, without a doubt, an amazing thing. Right? Abraham Lincoln, president in the 1800s here in the U.S., had differing perspectives. I believe it was at his cabinet. There's a book on this. We need different, and he's widely seen, right, by a lot of people as the best president we've ever had. We need, and this is something that struggles within the data and analytics culture, which, by the way, is the biggest pain point for data and analytics success, is companies stockpile people who are finding data to suit their own purpose versus allowing data to be an enabler, not the solution itself, right? Meaning, not allowing it to be confirmation bias, but it's a tool and an enabler. Sorry, I thought you were doing
no, data. No. So the one thing I encourage again, I feel free to take the pixelated story and use that because it connects with people. They get it. We're talking in something that they understand. Again, this gets to the theme of communication. We're saying, okay, we understand this topic. Now let's apply it to data. It's the same idea. But one technique I want to share that I've used for a majority of my career, I was taught it by a very wise man early in my career. Anytime that we got into a room, we would, and we were having strategic discussions, we would assign a person in the room. Your job is to not be the yes man. Your job is to poke a hole in it. And the idea was that many times I was chosen as that role because I strongly supported a particular position. But the team I was working with knew I had the ability to be objective. I'm like, I have a bias and I'm relatively cognizant of it. But more importantly, I would frequently argue the other side to poke holes in my own argument, right? That's in my mind, that's a really solid strategy for strengthening your debate or your points in a debate. And so like, I'll give you an example. Like here's a concrete example. We go into a bid situation and you know, my team and I manage pricing. So the CEO would say, Jason, your job in this role is to, one, do all things we need done, but to challenge us and call out when you think we're being ridiculous. The reason why that strategy works is because it gives permission up front. It's not like you're looking for an in to say, like, man, how do I say this diplomatically? You know, I don't want to make anybody mad. I don't want to, I just don't want to take anybody off. When you get that permission up front from key decision makers, you create that environment. You create that mini culture, if you will, to poke holes in these things. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of times I have observed leadership wants to do these things, but they're not sure how to get the process started. And so I share that example just because it's a real world example that I have seen and I have utilized extensively throughout my career to create that environment of positive and purposeful respectful disagreement. Because to your point, it forces people to take differing perspectives, which are immensely valuable in my mind. They're fundamental to progress. And so kind of just, I'm a little bit on a tangent, but to bring it back here, I think that the confidence with data in conjunction with something like that could be a good duo to help people kind of start building this culture of challenging the status quo within their companies and even within their personal lives. So kind of to that point, how does this play into people's careers?
So this is a question I'm getting, or a discussion, point of discussion I'm getting more and more, especially as we are starting to see some numbers going in the right direction. People are looking at this and seeing that it won't last forever, this and that. I think data literacy, here's a prime example. A journalist from Australia had a conversation with me. Pretty much the whole point was, coming out of COVID-19, how does data literacy empower a person with their resumes, with their skills, et cetera? I did an article recently with Forbes talking about healthcare, and it was all about how healthcare will be changed post COVID-19. I've had some of the biggest companies in the world reaching out to talk data literacy. Why? Because even before COVID-19, data was important. How important do you think it is to companies now? Right? How, like, we're seeing, I've worked from home for years. The data coming in from work from home is companies who maybe thought they couldn't do it now can do it, and they understand they can do it. So I think what people need to realize is that data literacy has been a need for a long time. But as the world will transform in this post-COVID-19 world, things will be more digital. They're going to be more data-driven, right? There's fear around this. There's concern. There's optimism. I think there's all sorts of things. But the reality is, from a career perspective, data literacy could be, or should be, if we could use those terms, as fundamental as being able to type on a keyboard. That's what I would like to see. And the reason is, companies view data as an asset. Here's a prime example. There's a very large healthcare company here in the United States that I've worked with. And I had multiple people internal to my company ask me, they're asking or think that data literacy should be a job qualification for every new candidate. Yes, absolutely yes. This ability, and again, it's not that you need data science. It's not that you're data illiterate. You're already data literate, but there are certain levels. It's just like proficiency. Like if you're going back to Excel, if you're going to be in accounting and finance, you better have a certain proficiency. You better understand VLOOKUPs, right? If you want to succeed in those fields, there's proficiencies that, and maybe there will be standardizations and things like that, proficiencies that need to be attained for individuals and organizations. And in doing so, we can see skills in your career that make you valuable, right? If it came down to two candidates, one of you was good with data and analytics and making a smart decision with data, and one of you doesn't know how to do it, but you both have good resumes, you have good education, but that's the sticking point, right? Who's going to get picked? And the reality is, again, this does not mean you have to have a technical background. It doesn't mean any of that. It's getting confidence in using data and analytics, and maybe most importantly, communicating. So from a career perspective, this is a vital skill, not just a nice to have. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I've been saying about it lately, is this is no longer just a nice to have. It's becoming a necessity. And just like, and part of it, look at it this way. I've used this example before. I don't know if people realize it's especially in the scope of how long humans have been on this earth or whatever. It's only been a few short hundred years, a few hundred years that literacy really became mainstream. What did that do for people, right? It gave them their own ability to read and understand what was happening. Now think about data literacy in your career, giving you your own ability to find insight, giving you your own ability to make decisions, giving you your own ability to succeed with data. You're not being forced, you're not being told, you're not being manipulated, it's you. And from a career perspective, it, to me, work on this. I get asked quite often. I had a call just last week? Those at the university level, I get asked quite a lot. Hey, what can I study? What can I do? Happy to share that. Any listener right now, because that could be its whole podcast, we won't go into that. Just shoot me a message on LinkedIn or whatever. I'm happy to talk to you about what skills to really focus on in this area.
I love it. And here, you know, kind of to expand upon that, taking outside the professional realm, one of the things I really firmly believe is that data literacy also leads to other types of literacy, like financial literacy, and one that's near and dear to me, and it's really important now, is economic literacy, right? Interpreting economic information, understanding what's going on. Because what it does is it gives you a mental framework for thinking about data. And if you don't have that, you know, it's hard. You know, it's kind of like if you don't understand the scientific method, it can be challenging to kind of follow a framework like that. But once you get introduced to it, you're like, oh, that's a very logical and practical exploration of an idea. And so I just echo your sentiment that this is really important stuff. I typically go, you know, as far as to say that this is table stakes in the near future. You know, like, you remember back when the internet was new and it's like, I know how to use the internet, or I know word processing and Excel. It's like, yeah, most people, at least in the lines of work that we're looking at, need those skills today for jobs. Everybody has those. So kind of looking at those steps to become more data literate, what do you kind of see as those first steps people
should take? This is a perfect, we talked about this, right? We're already past our half hour time. So I think what we could do is let's maybe conclude with this and then have a subsequent talking about what an organization can do, because a lot of our listeners are in organizations trying to use data and analytics, what they can do. But let's start from an individual perspective. And this is a question, as you can imagine, I've received who knows how many times over the years. And I coined it the two C's of data literacy, and then I added a third. So I call them the three C's of data literacy. To start your journey, begin with curiosity. Just ask why. Right? When a chart is placed in front of you, ask why it looks that way. Is this right? Why is this right? And this does not mean that you're a data cynic, right? That we're not trying to be like, oh, that can't be right. No, we're trying to become healthy data skeptics, those who challenge the assumptions, those who dig in to understand if this is correct or not correct. We're trying to understand. Curiosity, you know, the old saying, it killed the cat. Curiosity spurs data and analytics, right? My colleague, Kevin Hannigan, and I forget where he gets it, but the five whys, ask why five times. Maybe you'll finally get to your true answer, right? I have five children personally. How many questions do you think I get? Constant, man. And let's be honest, sometimes you're frustrated, right? But the reality is I never want them to stop, ever. Never stop a person. And by the way, what do we think society does to children? Children are naturally so curious, but then they grow up and they're told you have to take a test this way. You're told you have to study this way. All of these things. You're told this is how your career path is lined out. Sir Ken Robinson has great TED Talks on this. We need to spur curiosity. That's step one, or one of the first things. Number two, the second C, creativity. The human brain has more power and creative oomph behind it. Right, we love to use the term domination, transformation, manipulation. Use the power of creativity. Data and analytics should be enablers. They should not be there to replace the human element, and that's not what we're talking about. They are enablers with the human element. Use your creativity. Use stories. Use all of this. I mean, listen to us talk about this. How many formulas did we go over today, Jason?
Not a single one. And you know what? You'll never hear me talk.
We're
about
giving hopefully we're giving practical approaches, ideas, thoughts, etc. It's entertaining, etc. So creativity, bring the human element in there. the third one, and this one needs to be probably very emphasized in the world today, critical thinking. Right? I don't think that can go understated at this point, right? We live in a world of quick 20-second beats of news, and then it's gone in our social feed. A new one pops up, a new one here and there, right? This goes to like the younger generation. I will tell you, they are digitally literate to like no one else. I watch my kids, a three-year-old who knows how to use touchscreens and all this stuff, digitally literate, but they've never had to be data literate. Right, because the decisions are made for them. The news comes so quick. So those three C's are where to start: curiosity, creativity, critical thinking. Then we could get into maybe more technical things, right? How do you ask good questions? How do you build a data visualization? How do you interpret it? How do you make a decision? What is strategic thinking? But again, how many of those are data science? Maybe there's some things you'll learn, but you know that's the reality of it, is that we don't have to start going back to school. You don't have to go get a degree in statistics. You don't have to do those things. Just get going with those three C's. That's how your journey can start. And then from there, we can push out to so many different things.
Jordan, this has been a master's class. I'm telling you, you delivered absolute gold here today. Listeners, I hope you have enjoyed this as much as I have. Next episode, we're going to expand on this topic. We're going to dig into greater detail. It's sure to be a barn burner just like this one, but be sure to tune in. And again, thank you for your support and make it a great day. Thanks so much for joining us today on another episode of Transformation Nation. Please take the time to connect with both of us, reach out through our social channels, and start taking those first steps towards not only transforming yourself, but empowering everyone to become who they want to be. Until next time, this is Jason and Jordan. Go dominate, my friends.